8. Flick. Flick tugged on a lavender beret in front of her bedroom window with a happy sigh. There was no other way to regard such a view, from the fetching houses to the swaying trees dappled in jewelled hues. It was a sight no forger could ever replicate. She couldn't remember the last time she'd held a parasol or felt sun-warmed cobblestones beneath her shoes. But oh, she was being dramatic. It had only been 43 days since her crime had confined her to the Linden estate here in Admiral Grove. Not a lifetime. Her maid entered with a light knock. "Miss Felicity is under house arrest," she had whispered to the other staff when it had happened, because no proper Atenian lady could be arrested. Flick often let her curls fall over her ears to make them think she couldn't hear their gossip. "The woman next door is a vampire." She was not. She had just given birth a month ago, which vampires could not do. "Miss Felicity is Lady Linden's illegitimate child." Flick was not. She really had been adopted. "Miss Felicity committed a heinous act. Forgery." Now that was true, though Flick wouldn't call what she'd done heinous by any means.
"Morning, Miss Felicity," said her maid, dismayed that Flick had dressed herself again.
"A very delightful morning indeed," Flick replied, tucking away her lighter. It was a gift from her mother for her 10th birthday, brass and delicate, but capable of so much more if only one took the time to light it. "Like you," her mother had said then, skirts wide and bright as her golden hair. "My little spark." The maids thought her strange for not being glum, but this predicament was her own fault. Her mother had every right to be angry, and any sorrow that stirred beneath Flick's contentment was of the devil. She had forged enough to know how to forge happiness.
"How is my mother?" she asked.
The maid looked away, same as she had for the previous 43 days.
"Well, milady."
"Well" meant her mother was still pretending Flick didn't exist. "It was only a ring," came the petulant thought. There was a time when Flick and her mother were close. They had meals and fittings for the latest gowns together because Flick's mother took great care in her appearance. They would pick out furnishings for the estate and take evening walks in the garden. Lady Linden had always wanted to know what it was like to have a child, she used to tell Flick. She had experienced and accomplished almost everything else, including founding the East Jevent Company, before she'd adopted Flick as a young girl. But as the ram colonised country after country, business improved more and more, and eventually, when Flick was 11, the EJC swept Lady Linden away. She spent longer hours in her office than with her daughter, and when she did come home, she was distant and almost bored by anything Flick said. Like a child with a new toy, it seemed as if her excitement at having a daughter had been replaced by the excitement of a bustling business. In time, Flick found herself searching for something to fill that void. For when one loved as much as Felicity Linden did, it was difficult to not be loved in return. It didn't matter that Flick had the best governesses, seamstresses, private tutors, and a full year of finishing school. She tried painting. She tried embroidery. She even tried her hand in the kitchen. To no avail. The forging started innocently enough, when her maid urgently needed a doctor, and their housekeeper refused to let her go without Lady Linden's approval, which was impossible to get since she was never home. Flick tossed and turned the entire night until the idea came to her. After all, Flick had grown up mimicking the upper class around her, so mimicking was what she did best. By daylight, her maid had a letter written in Flick's mother's scrawl. The footman's young son had a note in the housekeeper's handwriting a few days after that. She told no one, yet word began to spread. Soon people were trying to make appointments, and the housekeeper became suspicious. It was her maid's idea to set up shop in an abandoned warehouse near the prestigious tea room known as Spindrift. Flick had replicated identification cards, prescriptions, and even bank records.
discovering that many members of high society were simply frauds in top hats. The signet ring was supposed to be another forge for yet another awkward nobleman with his head ducked low. Flick had been careful, but signet rings were used to seal letters and approvals and held as much power as the ones who wore them. And unfortunately, unlike bank records, they were almost impossible to misplace. In hindsight, she should never have agreed to the job. The ring belonged to a high-ranking official, and the nobleman drank his tongue loose at parties. He outed the secret himself. A nobleman swindling a high-ranking official was newsworthy on its own, but threw a forger who happened to be a lady into the mix, and the reporters went wild. The scandal made the front page of every newspaper in White Roaring, and it was only because her mother pulled a string or two that Flick's name wasn't printed. Still, the whispers carried loudly enough, and Lady Lyndon cared about her image over all else. She had to. She was a woman in a man's world, where every slight was a sledgehammer, and her daughter had gone and made things difficult. Now, Flick would do anything to return to what they'd had. A busy mother was far better than one who was angry with her. But Flick had no way to undo what she'd done and earn her mother's forgiveness. It wasn't as if she could reach out to the papers and ask them to run articles lauding her mother on the front page. It wasn't as if she could give them a story worth printing when she was trapped in here. "Perhaps I can speak to her," Flick suggested. "For reparation's sake." "Miss Philip." A horse's whinny cut her maid short, followed by the yank of a carriage brake out on the street. Flick rushed to the window and pressed her hands into the sill. Several carriages were halted on the wide street in front of the Lyndon estate. They were draped in black, the silver sigil of the ram filigreed front and centre.
"Out of the way! By order of the Horned Guard!"
The maid gasped. Flick's hand flew to her throat as men leaped out, uniformed and stern. Sweat dampened her palms. This was exactly the display Flick had meant to avoid. Her mother would be furious. Her gaze fell to one of the guards pushing a pair of tinted spectacles up the bridge of his nose. She thought she recognized his gait and the surety that none of the men on this side of White Roaring possessed, but that couldn't be who she thought it was. How silly of her to think she could recognize someone just by his walk and the crooked tilt of his mouth.
"Oh, whatever will we do?"
her maid sobbed, yanking Flick back to the matter at hand. The Horned Guard was here. Here, at her house. Panic began to set in. Flick dipped her hand into her pocket, pressing her fingers around the square of her lighter. Downstairs, the door flung open. A buzz of noise rose, and Flick heard the butler's thin voice sounding aghast before a guard's proclamation rang out.
"For the arrest of Lady Felicity Lyndon."
Her spirits plummeted like the heavy hem of a terrible gown. A maid began to cry.
"Come now," Flick said gently, wondering if she shouldn't be the one being consoled. "It's not as if they're here to kill me. I'll be all right. Mother will get me out."
Her maid looked up, and Flick thought her dubious expression was a little unfair. Lady Lyndon could call in a favour, like she had done with the papers. Flick would be in there but one night, two at most. Right? She didn't know how arrests worked. It wasn't something anyone had taught her in between lessons about needlework and penmanship and how to keep house. Goodness, she was being arrested. Flick flung her bedroom door open. The hall looked hazy, distant. "You're in shock," she told herself. Her feet were moving, the stairs diminishing one by one. She searched the faces of the guards for the one she thought she had seen. She really had imagined him. Why would he be here anyway? He wasn't a guard. He was on the opposite side of the law. She heard hurried footsteps and glanced behind her, expecting to see her mother with an anguished gaze, the stern lines on her face looking suddenly soft. Flick always thought her mother had remarkable eyes, a shade of blue like the sea beneath the sun. But it was only Flick's maid with her gloves. She was carrying a bag over her shoulder.
"I'll pack you some clothes and necessities, Miss Felicity," the girl said, handing the bag to a servant.
Clothes were the last thing on Flick's mind. She peeked at the second floor office, but her mother's door was still closed. She might not even be home. It didn't matter. Flick was 18 years of age. She didn't need an escort. She wouldn't allow her mother to further embarrass herself on account of her daughter's misdeeds. "It is for the best," Flick thought to herself numbly. That was what her mother would say. Flick had done wrong, and this was only right. A stern-faced captain led her through the front door. "Chin up," she told herself. She was leaving. This was what she'd wanted, wasn't it? She stepped outside for the first time in 43 days. The sun warmed her skin, and the cobblestones were pleasant beneath her feet. The captain stopped in front of one of the carriages.
"In you go, miss."
A servant tucked her bag of belongings inside, and a footman dropped a platform for her, then headed for another carriage before she could reach for his hand to steady her step. She looked back at the estate, at the fawn-coloured bricks and the white-shuttered windows, and the roof that matched the pristine walnut floors inside. Her home, her prison. "I'm sorry, Mother. Come for me. Let me make things right."
"Watch your head there, love."
Flick froze at the voice that came from inside the carriage. But then the footman was slamming the door behind her, causing her to lose her balance and fall straight into a lamp. Slowly her eyes adjusted to the dim light, and she saw the face above her. It was him. Flick knew that voice from the nights when he would stop at her warehouse and drop those hands on her table, something clever in his eyes, which were as dark as the delicate tattoos winding up the side of his neck.
"I'm used to women throwing themselves at me, but really, there's a time and place," he said.
A current zapped right through her. His peaked hat was pulled low, and he wore tinted specs over his eyes, but she recognized his mouth. It was the kind that was hard to forget, and equally hard to stop thinking about.
"Gin?"
His lips curved.
"Hello, Felicity. I've missed you."
Flick knew they had turned out of Admiral Grove when Gin reached across her to part the curtains over the carriage window. His elbow brushed her chest just enough to make her breath shudder. A tiny sound escaped her throat.
Goodness. She needed to distract herself.
"Outside." Yes, outside, the old roaring tower rose like a skeleton imposing over everything in its vicinity. The bricks were a sandy brown and stacked into something ornate that surrounded a round clock face. Massive, sapphire blue hands ticked away, each minute passing like a sentence. Painted glass tiled the arching windows, reflecting sunlight as prettily as the balcony's gilded railing. The aetherium was beside it. Its many windows were dark, and shadows pooled between the five fluted columns set atop sculpted plinths. Flick shivered at the words carved into the architrave. "Mortui vivos docent." The dead teach the living. Gin leaned back, a whiff of bergamot, tea, and the sea lingering in his wake.
"Flick," she said.
She was always correcting him, and it had become a half-hearted attempt at this point.
"My name is Flick."
"Right, and I'm Jefferson III. He replied haughtily, pulling off his specs.
Flick growled, but something about the way he said her real name made her breath catch. She crossed her arms.
"I know you're a lot more versed in criminal than I am, but you're looking especially suspicious right now. Where are you taking me?"
This carriage wasn't en route to the Horn Guards headquarters. Not when a Casimir was inside of it.
"Oh,
Didn't you hear?
He asked, dropping his voice. You're under arrest because you've been a bad, bad girl.
She felt heat rise to her cheeks.
And then she just about erupted on the spot when he started unbuttoning his shirt.
You'll have to put in a little more work to see me undress, love, he said with a low laugh, peeling off the Horn Guard uniform and revealing a pair of black suspenders over a snug shirt.
Had he no decency? He reached under the seat and pulled out a black umbrella and a sleek jacket, then yanked on a lever between his end of the seat and the door. With an awful sound like something was breaking, the carriage ground to a halt. Shouts echoed outside. Flick heard one of the guards ushering the others to carry on. Jin gave her a grin.
We're going on an adventure, you and me.
You've got a job for me, don't you? Flick asked.
If I'm not in my prison cell. So smart and so eager to be in prison, Jin drawled.
Never put it past a Casimir to make something out of nothing. You will have a cell with bars and a bed and food and a guard who will attest to your presence.
You simply won't be in it.
And the cost, Flick knew, was this job that he mentioned but hadn't elaborated upon. Her pulse fluttered like wings, heart racing in anticipation. And when my mother comes to visit me, what then?
She's going to get me out, you know.
Jin had the same expression of pity and discomfort she had seen on her maid, and Flick knew he was going to say something she didn't want to hear.
By the time Mummy fills out the paperwork and strolls through the oars with her parasol, we'll have whisked you in and locked you up, he said, surprising her, and her heart swelled at his words.
How? She asked, but she knew he had his ways. This was Jin. Lethal smiles, artful hands, and one criminal voice. He threw open the carriage door and held out his hand, and Flick wondered if her mother would be even angrier if she could see her now. Had he ruined her life even further? As if he could read her thoughts, he said,
If it makes you feel any better, you were going to be arrested next week. Arthur and I pulled some strings to make it happen today, and then we pulled a few more to borrow you for a bit.
Flick tamped down her relief. She couldn't deny her gratitude for the freedom, albeit very likely temporary. The Casimirs had given her, but she was still wary, especially if Arthur was involved. She took Jin's hand. The leather of his gloves was warm in the satin of hers.
Goodness, she could scarcely breathe.
Borrow me for what? She asked, voice tight.
Forging, of course. If you want the job, it's yours. If you don't, well.
He tossed the Horn Guard hat into the carriage and shook his hair loose while the sun glossed each inky strand.
It's yours anyway.
Jin pulled her into the morning crowd of Stoker Lane, throwing her sack of possessions over his shoulder. The grey uniformed guard driving the carriage peered at them, a little uneasy.
Mr. Jim. Oh, Ollie, I look more like a gin, don't I? He asked, then angled closer to Flick to murmur. It's as simple as names go, unlike, I don't know, Sir Archibald Cornelius.
What will it take to get some respect around here, eh?
A group of us getting together and singing about self-love and butter?
He spoke so fast, Flick could barely follow. The guard looked apologetic.
I only wanted to say that my captain will ask why I took a different route and... How is your sister, by the way?
Jin asked. Like the two of them were old friends. The guard's brow furrowed in confusion. But he didn't seem as concerned about his captain anymore.
I hear she was selected as a tutor at that school. What's it called again?
Ashton or some such. Flick had worked with the Casimirs. They liked to learn everything they could about the people they ran with. In the way Jin said Ashton, sounded like he knew the actual name of the school, but was fumbling on purpose.
No, Adley, actually, the guard corrected. It's the Adley Academy for Boys. A large school way up on Right, right, Jin said. That's a true win, and certainly cause for celebration, isn't it? Tell her to swing by Spindrift. We'll give her a treat.
The guard seemed to have forgotten his concern altogether. That wouldn't really be
on the house, Jin added with a smile that made Flick forget her last thought,
and she wasn't even the recipient of it. A man shouted from the carriage that was stalled behind them, and the guard named Ollie appeared overwhelmed.
I had better move, he said, thoroughly flustered now. But that's very kind of you. I'll be sure to let her know. Thank you.
Of course, Jin said with a nod. He started to turn away. It was nice seeing you today, Ollie.
Always a pleasure.
Before the guard could say anything more, Jin started walking, his umbrella rapping along the cobblestones. Flick didn't know what to do besides keep up. When she looked back at the guard, he was spurring the horses away and tipping his hat at her as if he'd never seen her in his life.
How did you do that? Flick asked. I have no idea what you're talking about, Felicity, he said.
But when he turned to give her a grin before she was swept into a hubbub of overskirts and tailcoats, it was obvious he knew exactly what she was talking about. Flick had practiced her forgery for 3 years in an abandoned warehouse, but she'd only met the Casimirs several months ago, when Arthi needed a letter forged in the handwriting of one of Etenia's many officials. Arthi must have been content with the work, for she and Jin came often after that. She was never friendly or talkative, but Flick got to see Jin, and she enjoyed the jobs they gave her. To the Casimirs, what she did wasn't shameful or vile. It was work. A talent, even.
A crime, her mother's voice insisted. Her mother ruled the EJC the way the Ram ruled Etenia.
She dealt with right and wrong all day. When her men acted out of order in the colonies, when they stole from the inventory they were sent to sell, mother knew all. Eventually, Jin started coming alone. He would linger, making sure Flick hadn't forgotten anything. She never did, of course, and it made her wonder if he liked spending time with her as much as she liked spending time with him. She would study him in those moments, when she wasn't bent over her table, as he read over her work several times and bid her goodbye. Farewell, Felicity, or try not to miss me too much. She always did. Flick had never been very bold when it came to making conversation with Jin Casimir. Every woman and her sister knew of him, so how would Flick stand a chance? Something pulled at her skirts now, and Flick looked down to find a young boy with a tattered cap and grease on his cheeks. What's got you, then? She asked.
Please, miss, he said, a quiver to his bottom lip. Spare a coin, miss. The Lovelin Foundry dot my pay.
Oh, you poor thing. Flick started digging in her pocket, but Jin leaned over and stopped her with a hand to the arm. It was barely a sweep of his glove over her sleeve, but the heat shot through her, every nerve ending zapping with a current.
Let me tell you a secret, eh? He said to the boy.
The boy's eyes lit up. He was rolling a wrapped toffee between his fingers. Jin pointed with his umbrella.
See that alley over there? There's a woman standing in front of a door with a bag full of treasures. Tell her gobsmacked is the answer to the riddle.
Gobsmacked? The boy asked. Jin nodded.
Say the word and you'll get a gift out of it. Got it?
Got it! The boy yelled and took off down the street.
You?
Flick started.
Lied.
She was certain he had lied. But he spoke with such candour that even Flick had a hard time not believing him.
He believed you.
It's a skill, love, Jin said, straightening.
But you lied to him. That was positively churlish. You've ruined his day,
she reprimanded, and Jin tossed something at her. It was the boy's toffee.
Jin, you stole that from him.
Sticky fingers. Sorry, he said, not looking the least bit sorry.
You're...
He lifted his brows.
Superbly striking or savagely clever?
That boy was a crook. He filches for a smaller gang.
That was a child, she protested, swallowing her frustration when he sighed. And I don't forge any more.
The words burst out of her, surprising them both. Jin's forehead scrunched.
But you're good at it.
The raw honesty in his voice struck her.
She was good at it.
Flick had been searching all her life. For what? She didn't know. She thought she'd found it when she began forging and people sought her out. But now, as she clutched her beret against a gust of wind, she thought perhaps that wasn't true. They stopped at the intersection. Her old warehouse was two streets down. Spindrift would be just a little farther ahead, right where the slums of the city began, with buildings tumbling one after the other.
Why would you stop?
Jin asked, pulling her back to the present.
Because,
Flick trailed off, unsure, until the weight of his scrutiny pried the lid off of her frustration.
Because it's illicit. It's wrong.
She couldn't expect him to understand. But Jin was only half listening. He was watching a passenger in the window of a passing carriage, giving the older man's dark hair and monolid eyes more than a shallow glance. He looked old enough to have been Jin's father. On rare evenings when Flick would summon the courage to ask Jin questions, she'd once learned that his parents were gone.
Not dead, he had said with some uncertainty.
She was a fool for thinking he couldn't understand.
It might be all those things, Felicity, but I can make it worth your while,
he said in a voice that made her shiver, presenting her with a lilac ribbon. They were two paces from a woman selling hair adornments. She didn't think he'd even glanced in the direction of the store. Then he gestured to the top of Stoker Lane, to Spindrift, home of the Casimirs. He said nothing of the job, or how he would make it worth her while, and yet she followed him, her steps slowing as she neared the deep red building. She gaped at the smooth curve of the lettering on the frosted glass of Spindrift's double doors, the kinds of flourishes she'd once excelled in creating before her penmanship dragged her down a different path. She'd been here once before, during the day, when her mother had finally allowed it. She could still remember the taste of the extraordinary tea, the reason Spindrift drew crowds from around the city. It was easy to assume Spindrift belonged in the better part of the capital. It carried itself that way. The tea room was bright and alluring, the filth of the streets obscured by the cluster of fancy carriages and folk dressed to the nines, top hats gleaming and dresses heavy with embroidery, as if this were a lord's estate and his prestigious ball. As if it wasn't slotted in the midst of foundries and pleasure houses and slumping homes. As if it didn't serve blood to the undead. Ignorance had always been a defining feature of the privileged.
What if I'm seen and someone tells my mother I'm here?
Flick asked. Jin had the same expression as he did earlier.
We employ a lot of snitches, Felicity, but none of them report to Lady Lyndon.
The doors to Spindrift swept open in a jangle of bells, and a dark-skinned boy in a tailcoat and black gloves dipped a bow.
Rennie, my boy, Jin called, saluting him. He passed Flick's bag to a young girl and spread his arms in welcome as he turned a full circle and sauntered inside.
My lady, the boy named Rennie greeted.
Thank you, young sir, she replied before fascination took hold at the scene before her, Spindrift in motion.
There was harmony in the way the Casimir crew handled the floor, one jotting down orders as another glided by with polished trays. She inhaled deeply. The smell was rich and robust, fresh and malty. The wainscot walls topped by dark wallpaper lent a cosy air to clinking crockery and tittering patrons. Biscuits crisp between teeth,
sugar dropping like magic in pools of tea as deep as the night. It was a melody of sounds complementing a visual feast. Jin's gaze cut to her. "It's been a while since you visited, eh?" She flushed under his scrutiny. He remembered her visit from 3 years ago. She hadn't thought he'd even noticed her amid the sea of customers on Spindrift's busy floor. Flick cleared her throat when he pulled off his coat in the middle of the room. It was suddenly very difficult to breathe, but no one else seemed to notice his bawdiness as he slung the jacket over his shoulder. "Enjoy it while you can." He winked as if his words had nothing to do with Spindrift, and then he sauntered away before she could say anything more. Flick stifled a cough as a heavy perfume wafted off a pair of ladies with haughty expressions who had just entered the tea room. Rennie eyed them, whispering to a younger boy who was scribbling something furiously into a notepad, stuffed every which way. Somehow, Flick didn't think they were orders for refreshments. To the public, Arthi Casimir dealt in tea. To those who paid enough attention, she dealt in blood too. But Flick had read every letter and document she had forged for the girl and knew the truth. Arthi Casimir dealt in secrets. Secrets. That was it. That was how Flick would earn her mother's forgiveness. She didn't know anything about the job yet, or what Arthi and Jin needed from her, but they were bound to give her something. She needed to repair her mother's image, and nothing was better than a good word in the press. Flick could give her the very same front page she had disgraced her with, and it would all be thanks to Arthi Casimir. Flick would simply need to hear them through, and then go back and tell her mother of it. And if what Arthi needed Flick for wasn't worthy of the front page, she'd dig around their collections and see. Maybe. Flick didn't know if they had collections. She didn't even know if anything could be as scandalous as Lady Lyndon's daughter being a forger. But she would try. That was when Flick saw her. Arthi stood with her hands on the railing of the second floor balcony, surveying her domain with eyes that might once have been warm, the light long devoured by calculation. She wore trousers and a suit jacket, as if they weren't made for men, lace-up shoes instead of button boots, a waistcoat instead of a bodice, and a pistol in lieu of a parasol, bright at her hip like a knight's sword. Arthi Casimir was a maestro commanding the room, a queen at her throne, the hangman at the gallows. Above all, she was Flick's last chance at redemption. But when Arthi's eyes fell on her, Flick didn't feel so certain. Arthi's hair was a halo, but her expression made Flick feel as if she were tiptoeing on knives. "Welcome, miss." Flick pulled herself away from Arthi's gaze to find a girl in a ruched bodice gown with raven hair and a red mouth. She was beautiful in a way that came from being a melody of sharp contrasts. "Let me lead you to your table." "Oh, I'm not here for leisure," Flick said. The girl was demure. "The house insists you join us for elevensies." Flick snuck a glance up, where Arthi watched and waited. It felt like a test somehow. And when the girl started through the maze of tables, Flick hurried after her to the vacant seat. She perched in the chair and did her best to smile at the gentleman eyeing her over the day's paper from the next table. "Royal or supreme?" the girl asked. "I like to suggest orange pekoe if you're fond of adding milk and sugar, but it could take a smidge." Flick reached for her lighter, gripping the comforting weight before she set her hands on the polished wood of the table. "Oh, I wouldn't know. I'll take what you think I'd like best, please." With a nod, the girl bounced away and returned with a full spread that Flick's mother wouldn't even offer her closest associates. Steam curled from an ivory teapot, and biscuits fanned along the curve of the plates. Toothpicks speared a pair of sandwiches layered with butter and sliced strawberries atop fresh preserves.
The sugar bowl and creamer were rimmed in silver and boasted patterns too detailed to discern without leaning in. Before Flick could drool at the display, the girl set a cup on a saucer and poured her a stream of tea as if the act were an art. Flick scanned the balcony and floor. Arthi had vanished, and Jin was nowhere to be seen. Cream? Flick beamed. Yes, please. I do love myself a good dollop. Here you are, the Royal Rouge. When the girl stepped back, Flick lifted her cup for a sip. Flavor burst along her tongue, warming her with its earthy undertones. It tasted of rose petals and sweet caramel, reminding her of the cake bites her mother's ships would bring from Jeevant Gar. This is downright delightful, Flick declared. It was smooth and sweet, with something that she couldn't quite place, even when she let it linger. Something mysterious and ardent. It was everything Flick wanted to be. The girl gave her a look, and Flick knew she was overdoing it. High society tittered over her personality every chance they got, because they didn't understand that the little things were meant to be appreciated too. She set the cup down. A card was tucked beneath the saucer, making her pulse pitter-patter at her neck. Inside was an address written in an impatient, slanting scrawl. 337 Arms Place. 9. Arthi. In her room, Arthi clipped the chain of her watch and tucked it in her pocket. She buttoned her vest before throwing on a tweed jacket and adjusting the lapels. Remembering her mother, who always dressed her best for everything, even death. When Arthi closed her eyes, she could picture her mother lying in the sand, the sea foam meandering around the beaded trim of her sari. It soaked through the fibres, turning them the same deep red of her blood, until Arthi couldn't tell where her mother's beauty ended and her wounds began. She sometimes imagined herself beside her mother on the shore, the water lapping at her skin. Wake up, wake up, wake up, the waves seemed to whisper. Arthi met evil when she was only a child, and the great big Atenian ship came ashore in Ceylon. The Ceylani had gone out to greet the Atenian soldiers, offering sweets and a place to stay in the shanties by the sea. Not long after, the clear island skies billowed with smoke and chaos as the invaders turned peace into madness. Colonists, they called themselves. The Ceylani didn't have a word for that yet, because they'd never faced people like that before. Kind on the outside, greed and devilry on the inside. They wore scarlet uniforms, sharp and commanding, as if they were righting the world's wrongs. Their weapons were the stuff of cowards, allowing them to kill from a distance. Rifles firing faster than their enemies could run. Some Ceylani fought back. Some succumbed. Others fled on boats, escaping to the neighbouring country of Jeevant Gar, which at the time no one knew had already fallen to the Atenians. But it was monsoon season, and Arthi's mother did not think her sickly 8-year-old daughter could survive the journey. So she took her to the village healer, who had toured the world beyond Ceylon and acquired the knowledge of it. The man had taken one look at Arthi and claimed they needed a miracle. Anything, Arthi's mother had said in her red sari, so focused on saving her daughter that she didn't realize her own window to escape was closing. Anything. 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 In the years that followed, Arthi sometimes heard that fervent plea in the dead of the night. She could hear the bullet that struck her father. The three it took to stop her mother. She slammed her bedroom door closed, shutting the memory inside. The death. The blood. It was ironic that she was in the business of the same substance that haunted her past. From the shadows of the second floor balcony, she watched the way Flick devoured Spindrift, her hunger at odds with her sweet demeanour. The girl was taller than Arthi,
buoyant curls framing warm features and a pert nose, her skin a deep, dusky brown. She was skilled beyond reason, enough that Arthi could overlook the fact that she was the daughter of one of Atenia's vilest women alive. Arthi watched as Flick clutched the address like a lifeline. Whether she accepted the job or not was to be seen, but Arthi had her guess. "Your guard is here," Jin announced, rapping his knuckles on the wall behind Arthi.
"I can see why you said yes."
Arthi didn't take her eyes off Flick.
"I will not ask you to elaborate."
"Mm-hmm," Jin crooned, and she knew that if she looked his way, he would waggle his eyebrows. "You had to have some reason to shake hands with our enemy."
The two of them had spent the remainder of the previous night running through the probabilities and risks. Their alliance with Laith would be tenuous, but they were on equal footing. For if he was dangerous and unpredictable, so was she. Jin leaned against the railing and peered down, following Arthi's line of sight, when she shifted her gaze to Laith. He looked different in the daylight, more boyish and youthful. He looked like much easier prey than he did last night.
"Think we can get this ledger in 2 weeks?" Jin asked.
"We have to, and we will," Arthi said.
"We'll need to close Spindrift, though. Neither of us will be around, and we'll need all hands on deck."
Arthi pulled her gaze away from the crowded floor, a kaleidoscope of colour and aroma, of money trading hands, and secrets spilling like rain from broken skies. Rennie and Chester together had uncovered a scandal from the Afton sisters. Apparently their brother had carried on an affair with a maid, and their father had fired her, resulting in an accident that cost her life. That made Lord Afton, by all convoluted counts, a murderer. A useful bit of information in the face of an impending betrothal between one of his daughters and the son of the late Viscount that neighboured them. It was a union that would make Afton a bit too powerful for Arthi's tastes, particularly since he ran the shipping warehouse where she stored her cargo. Chester was on his way to the Viscount's house now, where a footman or two would learn the news and pass it onward and upward. Chaos kept the world in order. Not bad for their last day open. "Then close," Arthi said. Jin was watching her. "It's okay to feel something about it." She cut him a look. Oh, she felt something about it, all right. Jin looked like he wanted to say more, but Arthi didn't want to hear it, so she descended the stairs and made her way through the bustling tables. Laith lounged by the windows, a portrait of stillness amid the mayhem of the patrons filing in and out. He was in those snow-white robes again, that tapered off at his mid-calf above fitted pants. A broad sash secured around his middle boasted a curved dagger. "What's this?" Arthi asked. He rose and presented the bouquet in his hand like a dead rabbit.
"I heard that the custom here is flowers."
He was giving her flowers while she was planning his funeral. "We're working together, not courting."
"Are they not one and the same?" Laith replied.
She took the bouquet. The wax paper was smooth beneath her fingers, the flowers fragrant, the gesture altogether unexpected. She clenched her jaw. Laith was devouring every second of it. "Nope."
"Chester,"
she said, stopping him on his way past her.
"Be a dear and take these flowers outside, will you?
Toss them in the dirt where they belong."
Laith's tiny, knowing smile reminded her of what he'd said in her office, when her eyes had betrayed her by following the shift in his throat.
"Oh, Arthi's first flowers," Jin remarked, joining them. "Pity they're from you." "No need to be hostile. I brought you a gift as well," Laith said. "Apple?"
There was a weight to his accent, so the peas sounded like soft bees.
"Apple."
Jin stared at the offering. It was the shiny kind he liked, the skin a plum colour near black.
Pretty sure there's a fairy tale analogy for this moment, Jin said, taking it from him. I'm Jin. Jin Casimir.
I wondered about that,
Laith said, tilting his head.
You don't look related.
We don't really care for lineage on this side of White Roaring, Jin said. But what he didn't say was that he had spent days looking over his shoulder when Arthi and he had first linked hands, fearing whoever had come for his parents was coming for him too, until Arthi gave them a last name of their own. It wouldn't do much, really, but when one was young and lost, almost anything made you feel powerful. A new surname promised a new start, a new future they could forge for themselves. Laith hummed, but didn't comment. He dipped his head. Laith Sayad.
Welcome to life as a criminal, Jin said.
Laith began to protest, but really, one couldn't ally with the Casimirs and not get a little tarnished.
Can't say we have your kind around here. Where from?
Laith's gaze dimmed.
Far enough the two became one.
That was new information. Had he left someone behind? Or had they died? Arthi inched away, turning her back on Laith, and Jin followed. She could sense the smirk on his face.
I take it your mission to Admiral Grove went well, she said before he could speak, heading for the stairs.
That did the trick. He sighed and straightened a frame, oozing reluctance.
You know she's the best forger there is, Arthi said with a sidelong glance. So stop whining.
You didn't even let me start whining. He followed her upstairs. She doesn't forge anymore.
She will for me, Arthi said. Flick was already invested.
Arthi had seen it on her face.
You never complained about working with her before.
In fact, he'd always wanted to, offering to go down to her warehouse before Arthi could, taking more time than was necessary. He'd even offered to pick up Flick today when Arthi had planned to go herself, knowing Admiral Grove loomed with the ghosts of Jim's past. He was the reason they'd even trusted Flick to begin with, given who her mother was.
It's one thing to go out to her warehouse and hire her for a job. It's another to involve her in a dangerous scheme.
She's not cut out for this, he said. Flick was innocent, that was true. Untried and untested. The girl looked as though she were made for decorating pastries, but looks were meant to deceive. Arthi opened the door to her office.
If only her mother was as concerned for her well-being.
Jin was still scowling.
Did you at least tell her about the job?
I don't make a habit of talking twice, Jin. So no, not yet, Arthi said. We've only got four in our crew right now. Jin picked up the vase on her desk.
Should have kept the flowers. Poor Captain Boy.
They match my hair quite well, didn't you think?
Arthi asked, turning away when his eyebrows shot up. She pulled on her Baker Boy hat and stepped back out to the balcony hall before he could tease her again. Laith was still seated at the same table, strands of that unnaturally bright white hair dusting his forehead. Arthi wasn't naive. He spoke with an accent. He wore the clothes of his kingdom. He walked with a distinct pride many foreigners shed like a coat. He was new to Atenia. Too new to be so invested in the ledger and taking down the ram. Too new to care for a country such as this. She didn't like the idea of him breathing down her neck, privy to her every word. But this was White Roaring. Comfort was hard to come by. Even coffins were made of stone.
Waiting on you, Habibti,
he called as she started down the stairs. She didn't know what that meant, and didn't want to ask. It was likely an insult. He stood up, and the sun cast his eyes in honey and spice.
Where to?
Arthi pulled up her collar, and Jin picked up his umbrella.
We're going to 337 Arms Place to recruit our fifth. 10. Flick. Flick glazed her lips with a fresh coat of pink as she crossed the street. She had missed it. The carriages rattling past, the horses trotting away from the newsboys waving papers with the day's gossip, the hustle and bustle, and how insignificant it made her feel. How she could walk and laugh and twirl, and no one would scrutinize or rebuke her. She passed a few plodders with the lurid yellow popped collars common to the gang, and then a stand displaying flowers in the same colour as her lavender dress and lopsided cap. Everyone knew who lived at 337 Arms Place, but Flick didn't know how Matteo Andoni fit into Arthie and Jin's plans. Surely he hadn't allied with them. Flick unlatched the gate and stepped onto the cobblestone walkway, where Arthie, Jin, and someone she didn't recognise were waiting. What would her mother think if she saw her now? Did her mother even know she'd been arrested? Had it only made her angrier, or did she miss her? It would be over soon, Flick told herself. She was going to fix everything. Jin turned at Flick's approaching footsteps, and she wondered if she imagined his eyes brightening at the sight of her.
I knew you couldn't resist an invitation.
Hello, Jin, she said.
Flick,
Arthie inclined her head. Glad you could join us. I thought you could use some fresh air. I'm sure Mother Dearest will forgive you for it. Flick froze, but Arthie turned away almost instantly. They were just words, Flick told herself. Arthie couldn't know what Flick was planning. We haven't met, the boy she didn't recognize said. He was far more cordial than she had expected.
You must be the talented forger I have heard much about. Honored to make your acquaintance.
My name is Flick, she said, abashed.
Laith, he said, tipping his head.
Jin scowled.
I don't think you want to get chummy with the Orned Guard.
Flick gasped, stepping away from him.
You?
Your secret is safe with me, Laith said. His voice had a calmness to it that settled her nerves. As far as I know, Felicity Linden is locked behind bars.
Up ahead, the manor door opened, and a butler stepped out.
Afternoon, Ivor, Jin called. It's your favourite dashing duo again.
The man called Ivor looked disdainful.
Here to see Matteo,
Arthie added. Though Flick hesitated to call Arthie graceful, there was a precision in her movements. She lived and breathed a type of fluidity born from confidence, and Flick was envious of her boldness. Ivor drew himself up to his full height, which was really only a smidge taller than Arthie, and his moustache puffed out with his chest.
Master Andoni is not taking visitors.
Remember our meeting last night?
He'll want to see me.
Arthie said it sounded like a threat, though Flick didn't understand how Arthie could threaten someone as well loved as him.
Go on, we'll wait.
Ivor glared and turned on his heel. Arthie leisurely pulled out her watch with one hand, the other hand in her pocket.
Matteo Andoni?
Laith asked when they were alone.
Is that how you intend to fetch the ledger? With a rake?
Arthie looked back. Her eyes were molten honey beneath the brim of her cap.
We'll have our ledger without you insulting my methods.
Something small squeezed through the gate and stumbled to the guard's ankle.
There you are.
It was a kitten. Her fur was dove grey and mostly white, as bright as his hair. Her tiny claws dug into the leather of his boots, and both Arthie and Jin looked sceptical when he crouched and picked her up with gentle hands.
Flick gasped. She's adorable. Where did you get such a precious darling?
I found her cornered and pawing at a snake. Poor thing would have died if I hadn't found her in time,
Laith said, and then his gaze turned distant.
I know a helpless soul when I see one.
I want to know what the skinny bloke mixes in his tea, Jin said under his breath, flummoxed.
Flick had to admit the guard's words were a tad sanctimonious. Of course the saint would have a cat, Arthi said. Laith rubbed the kitten's chin and looked at Arthi.
You know, criminal, I'd prefer if you called me by my name. The sooner you treat me like a member of your crew, the easier it will be for all of us.
She smiled, sweet and amiable and threatening, and Flick stepped between them before they could snap at each other's throats. She scratched under the babe's chin until her yellow-green, marble-like eyes fell to slits. Does she have a name? Laith looked as if he hadn't even considered that she might need a name. Flick thought names were important. They told you a lot about someone, which was why she felt she was more of a Flick than a Felicity. She'd outgrown her name when her mother had outgrown her love. The front door swung open again, and the butler appeared.
Aren't you going to invite us in, Ivor?
Arthi asked, like they were vampires who needed inviting. Ivor hesitantly stepped onto the threshold with a frown so deep it looked right about ready to slip off.
Come in, he said, in as much of a grouse as a respectable butler could muster. Welcome to the Andoni residence.
Flick's heart was racing in her ribcage as the butler led them through the house, first past a receiving room, then down a hall lined with cabinets stocked with antiquities. The air felt rich and homely all at once, making her wish for a blanket and a book to curl up with on one of the oversized armchairs they'd passed along the way. She was pulled from the fantasy when Arthi murmured something to Jin, who proceeded to turn a keen eye to their surroundings, and not, it seemed, to appreciate the decor. Was Flick wading into something she should not be involved in?
You were arrested, she reminded herself.
Even if she wasn't in a prison cell, she couldn't wade much further than that. Still, she was a sheep among wolves, dainty and colourful compared to their sharp lines and dark cuts. She was meant for needlework and gossip, not pistols and blackmail. Young women of her age and status were swooning over suitors and naming future children, not marching with the likes of the Casimirs. Flick liked that about Arthi. She not only defied society, she owned that defiance. She had forged a crown for herself when the world told her she was not meant to have one. Flick wondered if Laith saw the same in Arthi, and if that was why he watched her so intently. For it wasn't the scrutiny a guard gave a criminal, no. She wondered if Arthi shared Laith's interest. If there was ever a type Flick didn't want to involve herself with, it was the Horned Guard. She had too many crimes to her name.
Almost done giving us the tour then, Ivor? Jin called as they turned down yet another hall.
Can't wait to see the kitchen pantry.
Not that I'm here to involve myself with anyone, she reasoned when Jin closed in beside her and she had to remind herself to breathe. The butler ignored him, leading them into a wide and well-furnished parlour, its drawn drapes standing in contrast to the chandelier bathing the room and its crimson baroque walls and gilded warmth. It was as rich as her mother's estate, but it oozed comfort and warmth.
No, a voice was saying. I'd rather not.
A figure stepped through another door, more statue than man, far too beautiful to be real. Matteo Andoni. A girl was beside him, insisting on something, and noticing her flushed skin and low-cut bodice, Flick could tell what he was turning down. Matteo was widely desired, but it was well known that he kept to himself. He wasn't the rake Laith said he was. Flick's hand flew to her throat when the girl turned around. It was Beatrice Mercado. She had snickered at Flick's gown last season, and now here she was, with her own mostly undone. The girl said something else, but Matteo shook his head, and she turned with a screech before stomping out of the parlour.
A little warning would have been appreciated, old boy, he said, voice low.
He was a lot younger than Flick thought he'd be.
I was quite busy.
Ivor didn't bat an eye.
Apologies, sire.
Did you just turn down Miss Mercado? Jin asked with a whistle as the butler closed the doors behind himself. Flick didn't like that he knew her.
The voices and faces blur together when they all want the same thing, Mateo said almost tiredly. But then he saw Arthi, and a grin curved his mouth.
2 visits in less than a day? Oh, darling, I knew you would miss me.
Sit down, Andoni, Arthi said. We have to talk. He looked at her through hooded emerald eyes, the slow drawl of his voice making Flick feel as if she was listening in on something she shouldn't.
That tone gives me shivers.
Arthi bristled.
Sit down, or I'll put another bullet in you.
Flick sputtered.
You shot the Mateo Andoni?
That would be me, Jin replied, leaning against a wall and crossing his arms. Flick didn't understand how the pose made him even more attractive.
The emphasis is a nice touch.
Mateo sank into a velvet settee and slung his arms across either side. His legs were splayed indecently. As a matter of fact, his entire appearance was indecent, and Flick didn't know how Arthi remained utterly unfazed.
But we did more than that, Arthi and I.
No, not unfazed. A vein twitched in her jaw, her shoulders had stiffened, and there was a hint of colour on her cheeks. Mateo observed every bit of it and then some. His very presence needled Arthi, and he knew it.
Indeed, she agreed, sweet as a bird. After he declared his love for me, I had him shot in the heart.
Flick's laugh died in her throat.
He's... You're still alive, though.
Jin was enjoying this.
Alive? Mateo here has been dead a long time.
Mateo did nothing to refute the words. Laith's eyes flared wide, and Flick's thoughts ground to a halt. A vampire. Flick slipped her hand into her pocket for the comforting cold of her lighter. It was a reminder of another time, a time before the East Jeevant Company had drawn lines across her mother's brow, before it had stolen all her time and made her harsh, armoring her with animosity. Mateo Andoni's work was lauded across Atenia, his youth and looks as much an allure as the timeless genius of his skill. There were portraits in her mother's office commissioned from him, and she was the lady who refused to stand in the same room as a vampire, let alone shell out Duven for one.
Is it true? Flick asked him.
It wasn't as if vampires were easy to differentiate from human folk. They didn't need to breathe, but often did out of habit. When well fed, they had pulses and heartbeats. When cut, they bled the blood they'd drunk. Mateo tilted his head as if he could see the confusion warring in her. To lean into her mother's prejudice, or to see for herself if he was worth hating.
Is there any reason it should or shouldn't be? He asked.
Flick bit her cheek. How did it feel to never die? To lose count of the setting suns and the fattening moons? How did it feel to watch the living, born from nothing, turn into nothing once more? Given enough time, a vampire could learn all there was to learn. Discoveries could be made, coffers filled to the brim and then some. Flick assumed it would feel powerful, to be immortal, to never age, to revel in the knowledge that only a wooden stake or prolonged exposure to silver and sunlight could kill you. But at the end of the day, Flick thought, it must get very lonely. Unnatural. Her mother's voice echoed in her skull, and Mateo's beauty faded, the ivory of his skin dulling to the same pallor of a corpse. She set aside her astonishment and thought about how the secret could benefit her mother. This was good, she convinced herself. This was exactly what she had hoped to find. I think.
her mother would be gobsmacked to learn what Matteo Andoni really was. She ignored the unease in her stomach and looked up to find Arthie watching her.
Speak, Flick.
What about the job? Why am I here? She asked, clearing her throat and changing the subject.
Job?
Matteo asked, lifting his brows.
What job? And who is she?
His nostrils flared with an inhale, and she felt as if she was being sized up by a predator.
I've seen you before, haven't I?
Flick knew where, of course. In her mother's parlour, years ago. She'd found it strange that the painter set appointments at unseemly hours. But it fit her mother's equally unseemly schedule, which made everything perfectly all right.
This is Flick, Arthie answered. Also known as Lady Lyndon's daughter.
Matteo looked at Arthie warily. And why do we need the daughter of the EJC? Flick was the daughter of the founder of the EJC, so she didn't know why the comment stung so much. She was like the moon, she told herself. This emptiness was merely a phase she needed to traverse in order to be full again. Because she happens to be a master forger, Jin said, stepping closer to her. At his compliment, Flick's heart caught like a lighter snapping shut. And we can't do this without her. He brushed his fingers against her exposed wrist, calming her for a beat before sending her pulse into a frenzy. Jin passed a roll of paper to Arthie, who unfurled it across the glass table between them and Matteo. There were notes scrawled along one side, a wide space left blank on the other. Laith stepped closer, the kitten in his arms. Arthie centered herself in front of the paper, and suddenly, every man in the room was as enraptured by her presence as Flick was just then. And Flick could all but taste her mother's forgiveness when Arthie spoke, giving her the ammunition she needed on a silver platter. We're breaking into the Ethereum to steal the Ram's ledger.